Welcome to DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that is due to our sponsors this week, New Relic. New Relic made that possible, brings you DLC absolutely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I am, of course, as always, joined by my co-host, slash nemesis, slash friend, the man who spends every President's Day reenacting Millard Fillmore debates, Christian Spicer.
Hey, everybody. I actually just go to Civil War reenactments, like the ones in House of Cards Season 2.
Spoiler.
Well, not really.
Anything about Millard Fillmore, Christian?
A little bit, but not enough to just jump off and start talking about. Last time I listened to your intro, and this was about video games and board games and cardboard games and dice games, not Millard Fillmore games.
But he's, you know, he was the 13th president, the last Whig president, the last president we've ever had who wasn't either a Democrat or a Republican. Oh, it's fascinating. It's President's Day in Los Angeles and all over the United States. But that means that we got a holiday and we got an exciting long weekend. Oh, see what I'm leading towards? Because DLC this week, even though it is your dose of loving with Cannata, with a dash of laughs from Christian, this week it is also day later confirmed, because while the weekend technically might be over, we can confirm it is Monday, because we've got the man himself, my buddy, my pal, my once and potentially future co-host, Garnett Lee. He's what here up? To retroactively confirm your weekend. What's up, buddy?
Retroactively or proactively for next weekend, or just make it all weekend. Hey, look, just be like me. Don't have a job and make it all weekend days every day.
That's good. That's great. As long as you can make that last for you, I think you should. I think that's a good plan.
I'm going for it. I'm going to go big on this. This is my plan.
This is the longest you've been ghost in a long time. So we're glad to have you on DLC, and we hope that there will be announcements of goodies coming soon, right?
Yeah, I mean, you and I better figure something out.
I'm really excited. I think the audience is really excited. We've been getting lots of tweets all week long. But I also want to tease something we've got coming up that I think everybody should get excited about. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. I tried to pitch the guys on TRS about this like years ago. But I think it'll be cool, especially with the call-in format that we have on DLC. So March Madness is coming, and we're going to do our version of March Madness on DLC. So how this is going to work is we're going to try to crown the champion of video games. And the way this is going to work is we'll have a bracket. We're going to populate that bracket with games that you guys suggest need to be on that bracket. And then once we have the brackets all set up, you can fill out your bracket. You can decide who you think in the head-to-head matchups will win. And then over the course of all the episodes in March, we are going to pit games one against the other head-to-head and talk it out and decide which game wins in that matchup, of which game is the better game, until we reach the champion of video games. So,
wait, so your game facts now?
No, we're not going to take characters from certain games and pit them against each other, because everybody knows that.
Oh, it's different. Okay,
win.
It's different. I see.
Yeah, no, totally not different.
It's the games themselves. We're going to try to crown the best game. And so, what I need from everybody this week before March starts is we need to get suggestions of games that would work, games that you think deserve to be in the top 32 games. You can submit anything you want. The way you do that is you send an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com, and you have the title of the email be March Madness, and then you pitch games. Put games in there that you think deserve to be in the 32 games. The most games will get the games that get the most votes will be part of the 32, and the games that get the most votes will be seeded like you would seed teams in the NCAA tournament. So that's what I need for you guys to do this week. And then as we move forward, you'll be able to submit your brackets. It's going to be really, really fun, I think. So I'm excited to try out the idea. So again, dlcfeedback@gmail.com and the subject heading March Madness. All right. But that's not what we're doing today. Today, we're going to talk with Garnet. We're going to talk about all the exciting news that's happening this week. And you can participate. The way you participate, if you're listening live at dlc.tv/5by5.tv/live, is you can participate in the chat room or you can call in. Our phone number is 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. If you've downloaded this later, we hope that someday you can hang out with us. Every Monday we record the show 11 a.m. Pacific time, and then you'll be able to participate. All right. A lot of preamble this week, guys, but that leads us directly to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Yeah, that, of course, is the remix sent in by Patrik L. from Sweden. And I got a tweet today from... at Jan Gaiti, who said, whoever added the jingle to Story of the Week deserves a DLC no prize. Which is a call back to old Marvel no prizes from when I was a kid. I always wanted a no prize. So Patrik, consider yourself awarded with a no prize. The Story of the Week segment, of course, is where we convince one another of what the most important story of the week is. So Garnet, what do you think this week's Story of the Week was?
I like how I get to go first and just take the lazy answer of it's Titanfall, boom, drop the mic, walk off.
But, yeah, you know, people can submit stories of the week for us to consider by tweeting with the hashtag DLCSOTW, that's DLC Story of the Week. And we got a ton of people at Corey Gassner, at MQ Fisher, at Dominic O'Brien, and many, many more people said it's Titanfall.
Hold on. But so, Garnet, you don't get to drop the mic and just walk away. You need to explain. No,
I don't. I wasn't going to, as a matter of fact.
Pick up your mic, find it on the ground.
Right here.
Awkwardly find it.
You didn't let me finish because the but that was coming was, maybe I'm not going to do that. Maybe I'm not going to just make it Titanfall.
A head and shoulder fake from Garnet Lee.
He dropped the mic, but held on to the cord and ripped the mic back up.
So, how about in the context of some interesting... although really not all that relevant because it was January numbers from the NPD, I think that maybe the story of the week is, has panic started to set in at least at the beginning of 2014 for the Xbox One? So January, we found out that the PlayStation 4 outsold the Xbox One almost 2-1 at retail outlets. Okay, so granted, not a big deal because sales numbers in January were down pretty significantly, but VentureBeat tabs the numbers at about 280,000 consoles for PS4 versus 145 for Xbox One. We saw a lot of other indicators here, though. We saw Tomb Raider Definitive Edition selling 2-1 on PlayStation 4. We saw all other next-gen titles selling more on PlayStation 4 except for Call of Duty Ghosts. Okay, that's not a big surprise. And Lego Marvel Superheroes, I don't have an explanation for that, so we're going to put that as just a statistical anomaly for right now. We also know that Microsoft did not release hardware numbers at the end of the NPD report, which is amazing because for the longest time they've been trumpeting, right? We've sold X number of Xbox 360s. We've sold so many, you know, like because they had that big advantage because it was a big number for them to toot. Now that they don't have that number, I think that is definitely an indication of some weakness, right? If you don't publish that number after you've been doing it for so long, they sort of set themselves up for that. Even bigger indicator, though, is now we're starting to see Xbox One promos at retailers. So Walmart's running a deal right now online. You get a free game and free shipping with an Xbox One. Target started offering a deal where you get a $50 gift card. These are clear indications from retailers that they've got too much stock on hand. You know, from reaching way back into my history, you have when you're in retail, you have like a pool of money that you can use at any given time that's liquid to buy product, and you're always trying to buy product to keep your store shelves stocked. If you've got a bunch of Xbox Ones, which are not cheap, sitting around cooling their heels in your warehouses, that means you've got a bunch of money tied up in those. And at some point in time, you've got to move it. You've got to get that money moving again because you've got to go out and buy other stuff. And if that's the case, you got to start incentivizing it. So, you know, that $50 gift card from Target, that's a soft offer, right? That's like they can just sort of absorb that. Free game, the games that Walmart's chosen, they probably have high stock on shipping. That's something they're willing to absorb. So if those sort of indicators are in place, how many Xbox Ones must Microsoft have in its warehouses? Which is the loop back to Titanfall and how very important it is right now to see where that game goes and to see how Microsoft uses it as a tool. Because, look, it is an EA game. It's coming out also on PC. It's coming out on Xbox 360. Will Microsoft be inclined to take more drastic measures to not fall behind? Because I can guarantee you, they don't want to see a number in March that shows PlayStation 4 outselling them 2-1 again. And they sure as hell don't want to see a number in April that shows them losing in March. They need to, I think, you know, if you're a strategist here, you're looking at this and saying, when Titanfall comes out, we need to make hay as the sun shines.
Story. Well, let me ask you this question though, Garnett, to challenge you that this is an important story at all. Like, I get that they want to sell a lot, and I get that there is a fierce competition between Sony and Microsoft in the console space, but I don't understand why one coming out stronger than the other really matters all that much, because it seems to me that neither of these consoles is going away, and it seems to me that both of them have not hit their strides yet, software-wise, certainly.
Sure.
So what does it really matter to the consumer?
Ask the Sony PlayStation 3 lineup, because that's exactly what happened to them. You know, here's what happened with the PlayStation 3. Microsoft knows this scenario better than anyone. Not only were they out early, but they were out early and capitalized and got themselves out to a lead that was insurmountable despite some really strong late legs by PlayStation 4. PlayStation 4 put on a great run at the end of this generation. And granted, you know, if you're listening overseas in Europe, then you know PlayStation 4 actually passed 360 there. So this is why it is so important that, you know, Microsoft knows they cannot fall behind early. Falling behind early, even if it's a long race, even if you take that approach of it's going to be a long thing, you cannot fall behind early, because it becomes increasingly difficult, because you have that momentum, that rolling down the hill momentum.
But my point is that I understand from the CEO of Microsoft versus the CEO of Sony's perspective, or from the business biz dev perspective, why these are important. But
or
from
the
a
business perspective,
right? But from a player's perspective, like if I just owned a PS3 last gen, it didn't really matter to me, did it? That a 360 one, quote unquote, because
oh,
I got
I
great
see.
Games.
You're going to try and derail my story of the week by saying I'm just a gamer and don't care.
That's my job. That's my job to derail your story of the week. Also, I wonder, here's where I would support your story of the week. I wonder how much of the real story of the week, which was, hey, anybody that owns an Xbox One, you can try Titanfall right now. Go for it.
I wonder. Think they did? I mean, who do you think pushed that out there, right?
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was a let's use this right now to sell Xbox Ones. And I wonder also how many people rushed out and bought an Xbox One for free weekend, because it was free Xbox Gold weekend plus yep. free beta for Titanfall without a code weekend.
No one.
So,
no
yeah.
one did that.
James Stevenson thought a bunch of people would.
No. Mm-mm.
No.
You don't think anybody bought an Xbox One this
one
weekend
person.
Just to buy that, just to play
no.
that?
No, people might have bought Xbox Ones this weekend, but no one's deciding factor was that it was free gold and the Titanfall beta going public or becoming more widely available. If you were savvy enough to know that Xbox Live is having a gold weekend and you were sitting on a fence, I mean, you're a pretty, whatever term you want to use, hardcore gamer. You know what I mean? You're in the know. This isn't on CNN. It's not on the ticker on MSNBC or Fox News, and it's a free weekend that wasn't announced too far in advance. It wasn't as if I'm on the fence about this Xbox One, but let me just hold out. There's this free weekend coming.
No, I'm saying more of the Titanfall being open beta for anybody that has an Xbox One. Do you don't think people rushed out and bought them?
Jeff, the reason I steered away from
beta.
The reason I steered away from making that argument is that most of what we heard about why they did that was that EA was having code distribution issues and that they weren't getting codes out effectively, that there were a lot of people. I mean, and if you looked at social media, there were, you know, just a deluge of people getting at Vince, getting at Abby, getting at anyone at Respawn or EA Origin trying to get their codes. And the whole purpose behind the beta really was to do a stress test. The reason they wanted to do the code system was so that they could bring up the servers. You know, they didn't want to get that incredible instantaneous hit, but they wanted to get a pretty hard hit. I think what they figured was, hey, you know, we have some codes out there. It looks like the servers are up. We had our first fail on the servers. We got them back running again. Let's just throw open the doors and see what happens. It's going to be the best way to test it for us.
All right, Christian. So what do you think about Garnett's stoking the console wars fires story of the week? Do you think it's OMG Xbox panic time, or do you think this is not as important a story? What's your position?
I think it's an important story. I don't think it's story of the week this week, but I think it's a very important story. And I think people over at Microsoft with their new CEO, they're definitely aware of what's going on. And the Xbox One is a very important piece of hardware for Microsoft. So I think they are very aware. They're very conscious of what's happening. They really hope that Titanfall does very well. I don't think it's the story of the week, though, because I think the larger picture is still Comcast and Time Warner. That has implications in gaming, outside of gaming, and it's still, that is still the hugest thing happening in gaming this week. Even if you don't live in the East or West Coast where those two companies have a stronghold, the potential merger between Comcast and Time Warner Cable is insane, especially considering recent federal court cases basically stripping the FCC's decision to say that internet needs to be open and free. So that is still my story of the week.
Well, it's certainly a very, very big story that is developing. And we don't know if this $45.2 billion stock deal will actually happen. We don't know if it'll actually come to fruition yet. But if it does, it certainly will have ramifications, as you said, in a lot of different areas. It's you bring up this idea that the court struck down the thing, but net neutrality. But the real thing that the court said is, we see a way you could uphold net neutrality. It's just not the law yet. And last week, earlier this week, the FCC chairman said, "Hey, we're working on it." There was that letter from the five Democratic senators, including Al Franken, as the lead on that, urging him to work swiftly. And he said, we're taking up the cause. He didn't say specifically what they were going to do, but they understand that there is an urgent need to make rules to uphold net neutrality. Now, that hasn't happened. We don't know how he's going to handle it. We don't know if he's going to handle it. We just know that he's mentioned that he's going to handle it. So that gives me at least a little bit of hope. This Comcast Time Warner thing is really complicated, and it's a little scary, especially from people who are interested in cord cutting. There's a really interesting article in the New York Times about how this is really positioning Comcast and / Time Warner against cord cutters, so that it basically, the goal is to continue bundling services. So you have this this, you know, cable company, Comcast, and Time Warner has a lot of internet infrastructure. And because they can combine, now you can bundle together your cable subscription with your internet subscription and make it so that if you drop cable, it really doesn't change how much you're spending on internet. So all these people who are canceling their cable so that they can save money really won't be saving too much money. And it saves cable, basically, in the era of internet. So it's a complicated story. Garnett, how do you feel about this sort of big corporate conglomeration?
Well, I think the big question or the big story really remains the net neutrality issue and how FCC digs out of its, you know, ill-fated decision to cave, you know, years ago and develop this new class for internet carriage. And whether or not anybody amongst the commissioners is going to be willing to, you know, stand up for people the way they are supposed to do, as opposed to their corporate fund schools, you know, they have this bank that's coming in, and it's really, you know, that's big politics. The actual merger between Comcast and TWC, to me, yeah, it's a huge story. It's a big tech story. For gaming, I think that it has less implications than the net neutrality, because that's really what's going to be the question. And it won't be a matter of, you know, have Comcast merged with somebody else. It'll be a matter of who's your provider and what partnerships does your provider have if net neutrality is not upheld. So, you know, as long as that issue remains open, you know, cable, it's a big industry, but it's a big old industry that's apparently going to go down the same route that the recording industry did and try and grasp at, you know, the last dying breaths of the old days, as opposed to trying to figure out how to become a new, light, modern company.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, right? Like, that seems so clear to me, Garnet, what you're saying. And I think a lot of people see things like that. I mean, are we the idiots, or are people in the industry just these old industry, you know, veteran trolls that don't come out of their little cave or under the bridge and they don't realize what's happening?
Look, they're just Scrooge McDucks. They are on the second half of their lives and careers, and they're looking at the stacks that they've got and say to themselves, "Hey, I'm keeping mine and holding on."
Yeah. Yeah. I should note that story was submitted by @GreedyRaven, who agreed that this was the biggest story of the week. I think you guys are both burying the lead here, though. The people have spoken, and I think that the story is OMG Titanfall. OMG Titanfall, guys. It's a
beta. It can't be.
But everybody that has an Xbox One 8 was able to play it. Even PC players were able to play it. Garnet,
it's damn good
it?
On my 770 GTX. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you were playing it on PC this week? Weekend?
Yeah, I was.
This is the story of the week. We need to gush about Titanfall, or at least hash it out, because I've been having a blast. I've been playing tons of it, and I have a feeling all the people on the phone right now are wanting to talk about Titanfall, because it's the biggest game of the year so far. It's the one everybody's anticipating. It's the first real Hallmark next-gen game, even though it is coming out on the previous gen as well. And I think that throwing it out there and stress testing it and letting everybody play it for free, I think was a pretty brilliant move on whoever's part it was that made that decision. And I've been having a blast with it. So tell me what you think of Titanfall so far, Garnet.
I think that it's definitely got all sorts of, you know, legit Call of Duty DNA running through it. When you're playing the game, if you don't get that feel, well, I shouldn't say if you don't, because that's not what it is. I certainly get this huge feel of what was great about, you know, the heyday of modern warfare. That sort of, you know, frenetic, in the moment, you know, the combat really of this game. It's as I was saying on Twitter the other night, it's a remember that you want to blink every so often because you need to keep your eyes wet. It's a good idea to blink.
Right.
Because it's happening so fast. And yet at the same time, I think there's a tremendous amount of evolution that's gone into it. I think one of the things that stands out to me, this is just like a bunch of stuff off the top of my head. One of the things that really, really, really stands out to me from the two maps that are being played comes down to how critically important map design skill is when it comes to a multiplayer shooter. These maps are fan-frickin-tastic. They have excellent close quarter density inside the buildings. They have fantastic places for your Titans to get out and fight. They have excellent opportunities for the pilots to snipe at Titans and vice versa. I mean, I had a moment last night where I was inside a building. I had the nice lock-on missile. I got a couple of good shots on a Titan. One of his buddies came around the corner, stuck the 40-millimeter cannon of his Titan in the window of the building that I'm in and smoked me. I was like, okay. I saw the giant, you know, muzzle of this 40-millimeter cannon come through the window. I was like, oh, that's not going to go well.
I think you're absolutely right on this. I mean, I will relay my own exciting moment where there's these wonderful sort of columns in one of the maps where you can fit underneath if you're outside your Titan and in pilot mode running around, and you can kind of pop out, and then these giant Titan legs will be coming by, you know, and you're popping out from these little columns that are underneath a building, and you can take your pot shots and then run back underneath the columns. It's so wonderfully suited for all that stuff. And the brilliance of the verticality of the pilot, like the fact that it is so easy to traverse the environment because of all that parkour and your double jump and all the speed boost that you get as a in pilot mode when you're just outside the Titan. It really opens up the map in a lot of ways, and you can get up and you can get down and you can get through. And when you die and respawn, you can get back to the action a lot faster than you ever could in Call of Duty, which is a really brilliant mechanic to include, because I feel like, A, I feel like I'm just as powerful as a pilot as than when I am in a Titan. And sometimes I want to stay as a pilot. I'm not just waiting around for my Titan to be built so that I can get in it. I actually make strategic decisions as to whether or not I'm going to get into my Titan, or the really awesome thing of calling in your Titan and putting him in follow mode and then running around as a pilot and being able to cloak, which is brilliant that the cloak works for the Titan technology, but other pilots can see you a lot easier. So you have your Titan in follow mode as a decoy, effing shit up, and you as the pilot can be running around, you know, under his feet, picking dudes off. It is so exciting and fun and different and thrilling. Christian, go ahead.
Oh, so I played just an hour this morning. I was on the road in North Carolina for shows this weekend. But you guys have spent more time with it. Do you think this game was pitched to Activision and they said, no, keep making more Call of Duty? Or do you think this game happened after they left? Because this game, I'm excited about Destiny still, but I am curious how limiting that game will feel, just because Titanfall, again, played for an hour this morning, but from E3 impressions and videos, it almost feels like it has that Call of Duty reward system in it, where like you will always want more. You feel like you're going for something, you're working towards something, whatever that thing is. But it also seems, in a good way, more ADD in that, you know, you're wall running, you're jumping, you have a Titan. When do you pull your Titan? This guy just deployed their Titan. I'm going to get on the roof. I'm going to do this. And it's quicker and faster and more addictive and more fun per second. And I just wonder, going from that style of game back to a Destiny or Call of Duty Ghosts 2 or whatever the next one is, or Sledgehammers is, whatever it's called. I mean, am I crazy to think that if this was pitched to Activision and they said no, what the heck were they thinking?
Well, I mean, we don't know.
I know we don't. I'm asking your opinion.
I mean, supposedly they were pitched Modern Warfare over and over, and they kept saying, no, keep making World War II games. So, you know, people in suits want the thing that's proven to be a seller rather than, you know, having to imagine something else.
We wore suits to double jump, and we wanted something else.
I don't know. I wanted the same thing over and over. I don't know about you. I mean, I think, well, here's what we'll do. We're going to take a call in a second. But first, it's time for a break. Got to thank our sponsor, New Relic. New Relic, of course, the best place to go. It's the developer's best friend. If you're an app developer of any kind, it's your best friend. It's got an easy-to-use analytics dashboard that gives developers powerful code-level visibility into the real-time performance of their apps. That means you can spot bugs, see bottlenecks, and fix problems fast before they ever affect your user base. Thanks to New Relic, you no longer have to ship an app to production and then helplessly wait around, hoping for the best until negative app reviews and tweets start to pour in. New Relic empowers software engineers by showing them what's working and what isn't, all in real time. The way it works is really straightforward. New Relic gives developers a lightweight agent that you unpackage into your production-level apps. The agent sits quietly and securely in the background, gathering real-time metrics across geographies, devices, platforms, all the way down to the end-user level, and then displays all that data in real-time graphs so that coders have total visibility into the performance of their web and mobile applications. So go check it out. Check out New Relic. Go to newrelic.com/DLC. That's newrelic.com/DLC to learn more. And you can use offer code DLC30 to take advantage of a special 30-day extended free pro trial available exclusively to the listeners of DLC. Build better performing apps, get deeper insights, spot bottlenecks quickly, and improve performance with New Relic. We really appreciate New Relic's support of DLC. They make our show possible, so we urge you to support them as well. Again, newrelic.com/DLC with the promo code DLC30. I think we should, I mean, I want to continue gushing about Titanfall. I've been having such a blast with it, but I do think that it is unfortunate, at least for the kind of gamer I am, that it has no single player component.
Yes.
And I also think that this might herald the beginning of decoupling multiplayer games from single player games. I think we're at the end of an era where you would pay $60 and in that box you would get everything. I think it's likely that if Titanfall does titanically well, that all of a sudden we'll see this new Titanfall title announced that is the single player Titanfall game. And so you'll pay $60 for the multiplayer Titanfall game and then go and spend $60 for the single player Titanfall game, which it's interesting. I just think that that's going to be the way things are from now on. There's going to be, they may end up making for better games because you won't have this bifurcation of the development team's energy and time. But it also means that we're going to continue to have to spend more money on more stuff. Now, it is very admirable that they don't seem to be interested in microtransactions in Titanfall, even though the hooks are certainly there. I mean, it's got burn cards. They're ready
to be. Those burn cards are, there's a switch waiting to be flipped. right?
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like they're interested in doing that. I hope that stays the same. I mean, I think those burn cards are a major revelation. And I think those burn cards are a wonderfully brilliant addition to the formula. They're loot. It's loot. It's a you open your loot pinata like you would in WoW or anything else, and you see what you got when you complete a challenge. And for me, who's addicted to loot in games, I dig that. I like, ooh, what card did I get? Pretty smart. Garnet, what do you think?
I feel like playing Titanfall, I agree that, like yourself, I thought, wow, this game would make a fantastic campaign. But that is a knee-jerk reaction. And the truth of it comes down to a great campaign game really goes in completely different ways than multiplayer. And maybe it's more than just a decoupling, Jeff. Maybe it's an acceptance. I think the question mark here comes down to this. Whether or not console gaming has gotten to the point where it's ready for a Team Fortress 2. Is it ready to have a game that is unabashedly just a multiplayer fest that you play all the time? And we've thought it has been with Call of Duty for a long time. But if you really go and dig into Call of Duty, a lot of people play the single-player campaign. They like the single-player campaign. They enjoy it for its, you know, bombastic nature or for its tune-up. There's a lot of people who don't even play online. So I think that this is pretty much a early litmus test for where is the multiplayer community on console? Can we do this? And as much as we look at this and go, wow, this is a cool world, it takes a cool story and cool characters to then become a single player game. And it's such a different thing. I mean, you know,
but you have these great systems in place in Titanfall. You have this great world, this technology. I love all these systems and I want them to be put into play in interesting storytelling ways. And I want to have fun in this world because I'm so intrigued by that world, you know.
Aren't you having fun in this world when you play the game?
I am
indeed. Here's the question. As a single player, this hypothetical single player campaign, let's say it's, you know, given how heavy it's going to be on assets, but it being Respawn who'll put, you know, a crazy amount of work into it. Let's say it's a 8 to 10 hour campaign. Does that sound fair?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you've got this 8 to 10 hour campaign. You sit down and play your 8 to 10 hour campaign and it's over. I would be willing to bet you that by the time this beta ends day after tomorrow, you will have played 8 to 10 hours of multiplayer and be eager to play more and more and more and more and more. That single player, maybe you play through it a second time, maybe one second time, but it becomes, you know, it's just this thing. It's this monolithic thing that you've gone and done and experienced it and enjoyed it. And that's why I'm saying they're just so very different.
But don't you think you would be more connected to that universe and more enthusiastic about it? I feel like, let's take Halo, for example. If Halo was only multiplayer, I don't think it would be Halo. I don't think the Halo universe rests on the narrative. It rests on the enjoyment of Master Chief in that world and all the implications of the, you know, religions playing against each other and all that stuff, all that juicy stuff that can be a backdrop for a multiplayer game. But ultimately, when I'm playing Titanfall, I want to kill as many dudes or hold as many control points or, you know, score as many points so I can level up, so I can get the next cool thing, so I can keep leveling up, so I can get the next cool thing. You know, it's a loop instead of a real exploration of that universe and that fiction and being excited by all the ramifications of what I'm doing.
But I wonder this, Jeff. I wonder if by setting it up this way, assuming EA or Respawn has a long play for the IP, if this allows them to decouple other types of media experiences for the game, whereas a Halo movie has been, you know, on again, off again in the works, but it's like, how do you make a movie of a game that's so popular and have it work? Whereas here, if the game is only multiplayer, but they have, you know, a show Bible or an IP Bible for this type of game, does it then make it easier to make that spinoff movie? And I'm not just saying it's Pacific Rim, but, you know, to make a single player game that is totally different, but is in this world versus trying to combine the exact same mechanics into a single player campaign. Because it can take some of those mechanics that worked well, but also make it its own unique style of game. Like, I
mean, I think that's what's going to happen. Yeah,
I agree with you that as a gamer, you know, I am more comfortable. I usually enjoy, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I don't know if this is what you said, but I enjoy single player campaigns. But I don't know if Titanfall's single player campaign built in this exact same world would be an awesome single player game. Whereas, you know, the Last of Us DLC just came out. That's great single player narrative. Infamous is coming out soon. The Infamous games for open world games, I've thought, have had a pretty strong narrative in a world. And this is, you know, obviously a new character, a new protagonist. So there are other games out there that do that. Does Titanfall, does Call of Duty, you know, these games that don't have iconic heroes, do they need to do that? Or is it the case of, instead of saying, oh man, they shoehorned multiplayer into BioShock, lame, or multiplayer in Tomb Raider, no one cares about it. For this style of game, is it the reverse? Is it, oh, well, great, they shoved in single player into my Titanfall, no one cares, and instead let them build that universe, that narrative, other ways that make sense for the property, instead of putting it in this game?
That's certainly the trap, right? That's certainly the trap. I think that maybe the game that Jeff's talking about, I mean, Jeff, obviously, we're high on Titanfall right now. I think that, you know, given the way that you're looking at it, you're probably going to be even more excited for Destiny. Because, look, Destiny
is...
Oh,
I'm very excited, yeah.
I mean, Destiny is, you know, very clear up front about what they're building in that universe as a story base, as a fiction base, you know, all this huge amounts of canon. And I think that, you know, you ask about how relevant it... I mean, they're going to be the counterpunch. They're going to be the game that comes back like Halo, potentially, and says, right, hey, here's an amazing single-player campaign that's going to stretch over a trilogy of games that has really great content and characters and things that you're going to be excited about, and a fantastic multiplayer game. And on top of that, now we're going to be innovating in the multiplayer space, pulling from, you know, the MMO arena, where we're going to have these instance mega fights and other elements that we're going to bring in to have, you know, different kind of interaction than what you've seen in shooters before. I think that that makes a pretty huge argument for what they're going to do in Destiny.
Yeah. All right. Let's find out what a caller has to say. I think everybody wants to talk about Titanfall. So we've got someone from 407 on the line. Are you there, caller? What do you think of Titanfall? Hey. Are you playing it?
Oh, hey, Jeff. Hey, Garnet. Hey, Christian. Malik Sharma from Florida. How you guys doing?
Very well.
I have not had the privilege of getting into the PC beta. Unfortunately, I do have a gaming PC. But what I want to ask you guys are like maybe three questions about Titanfall. I guess the first thing I would ask is, did you think Microsoft made a mistake not making Titanfall an Xbox One exclusive versus allowing people to play it on PC and 360? And the other thing I want to ask you guys is, what do you guys think about the AI bots that are in the game? I had heard before the game came out that the AI bots were going to be, you know, smarter and like, you know, basically allow guide players to the objectives and basically funnel the game in a direction Respawn wanted. But from what I've been seeing, the AI bots seem to be just mindless drones who get killed pretty easily. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, do you guys think if the burn cards end up being microtransactions, that you basically at that point, you know, not be interested in playing the game any further?
Three great questions. Let's take them in order. Garnet, do you think it seems to me that Microsoft didn't have a choice. I think EA was like, we want to sell a lot of copies of this, so it's going to have to be transgenerational. But
yeah, I think that's
that your
slam
take?
Dunk. It's an EA game, and that's a pretty slam dunk answer on that.
Yeah. Second thing, the AI for the bots. Now, my experience has been well. First of all, I will say right here, if anybody doesn't know me, they should know right away, I'm not very good at multiplayer first-person shooters. I'm just pretty terrible at them. But that's kind of what I love about Titanfall, is that it has a bunch of systems in place to make the game very welcoming and very fun for people like me who jump into Call of Duty and get pwned. First of all, the automatic pistol, which has this huge cone of automatic lock-on that lets you just sort of paint the screen and lock on to people. Yeah, there still needs to be a little bit of skill as to when you're using it and how you're using it and how to avoid getting your butt kicked before you get those three lock-ons on another player. But it really, I think, makes the game feel like, oh, I can accomplish something with this weapon even as I'm learning the systems and moving forward. And secondly, I think the AI accomplishes that same goal. Yes, the AI behaves in ways that are kind of dumb a lot of times. They'll get into skirmishes among themselves, and so they sort of sit there to let you pick them off. But what I find to be really fun about that is, A, I get some kills and I get some score some points even though I'm killing grunts. So yeah, they're just fodder for me to feel at least a little less inept. But also, in the I can't remember the capture the points version mode, what the name of that mode is called, but is that hard point? Is that what that's called? Anyway, you notice that those guys tend to spawn around the control points. So if you find yourself in those control points and you shoot them, you kill the grunts, you have now alerted other people to your position because you just fired your gun. So there is some strategic aspect to where the grunts are, who's killing the grunts, how they're funneled through the map, where they're pushing people. So they both accomplish this feeling of making me feel empowered when I'm not very good at these games, but also, you know, give information to more skilled players who are able to take advantage of that. What do you guys think?
It's tough, right? I think you made great points that they serve a purpose, but to some extent, again, in my hour of playing and just reading people's impressions online, I wonder if it just, you feel, does that satisfaction wear off, or does it become a frustration where, you know, you talked about how you get into the action quicker. Is it then problematic if you're getting into the action quicker and you're just dealing with grunts and you really kind of want to just go, you know, kill other people, right? Not other human controlled players, to be clear. Then it over the long haul, is it something that, you know, people would want to be able to disable? That just gets in the way. But then if you turn it off, you know, the world is so less populated that it becomes a bigger issue. My question is, I guess, back to you, Jeff, or to Garnet, is in the long run, do you think this will be a good addition? I don't know of other games where people have enjoyed bots throughout the life of online multiplayer game.
Again, I'm not, I think we may have lost Garnet temporarily, but again, I'm not the typical first-person shooter multiplayer guy. So I mean, take my opinion with a grain of salt. But for
but
me,
is that satisfying,
I love it.
To kill, just know that you're killing fodder?
In the short term, I mean, I'm also hunting down players while I'm playing. I'm trying to find them, and you can differentiate them on the minimap pretty easily. So it's pretty clear who you're, you know, shooting at. But I think, yeah, just having more targets on the board is more fun. It's a shooting gallery game. Having more stuff in the shooting gallery is a good idea, I think. I don't really see a downside. If you want to just target humans, go for it. The grunts don't really provide much of a danger right to you, so you can wholly ignore them if you choose to. But it's also fun to hack the specters. Have you tried that yet? That brilliant, by the way, piece of fiction, which is why I love this universe instantly already, is this the hack knife where you can jack into the back of a specter and hack it for your side. Super cool. Super cool.
Have you seen or have they said anything about the 360 version? I'm so curious what that game looks like, how it will play.
Well, I mean, one of the things I tweeted this weekend was that I'm looking forward to the day when Titanfall looks like a launch game, because I don't think it's particularly impressive looking, certainly not compared to some of the games we're seeing early videos for in this current generation.
Keep in mind you're playing beta, so they may not have downloaded all the assets to you. I think
that's a good point. Yeah. I think it looks nice. I'm not saying it looks bad. I'm just saying it doesn't look light years ahead of Call of Duty on a PC. You know, it's pretty, but it's not, you know.
Jeff, you should get a PC code because, you know, like you have a nice PC and running it with, you know, multi-sampling, anti-aliasing, and you know, all your screen effects. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I would love to play it on PC as well. I really would. But I'm digging it on Xbox One. It's pretty great.
I missed part of your conversation because I dropped there about the bots. I think that maybe the bots are standing in as proxy for a little bit larger story here for me, which is that I felt like the one piece that wasn't coming across for me as strongly as I had hoped out of Titanfall comes from the blurring the line between single player and multiplayer. So the promise was, to my mind, that in playing Titanfall, we'd be playing this game where it was like we were coming into a single player level, and there, you know, and maybe
I don't think we're seeing that in the beta. I don't think
seeing it in the beta. Even in the hardpoint mode, it's just I'm not getting that. And so I think because of that, because mostly you're just playing deathmatch or command control point matches, the AI really isn't doing that much, and right. I think it depends on what those other play modes may be, if they're in there.
Well, two things. First of all, how great is the tutorial? I thought the tutorial was fantastic, and it's kind of old school. Like, you don't see games doing tutorials like that anymore. That's
it's
like
Halo old school.
Yeah, like late 90s, early aughts. But also, there's that moment in the tutorial, right at the end of the tutorial, where it's like, oh, we're giving you a horde mode. Like, how many waves can you survive? And I was like, oh, I hope this is in the real game, because this I could get behind. Like, invite, you know, three other of my buddies or five other of my buddies in and try to survive waves of troops and titans falling onto a arena. I would dig that a lot. I hope that that's part of the game.
Clearly, they've got a lot of sophisticated AI research that they've done in order to power so many bots on the screen at once.
Right.
And by the way, now that we've played it, can we all agree that the player count is not an issue?
Not an issue whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, everybody that had played it up to this point weren't the people that were complaining. It's only the people that hadn't played it yet that saw the number and were like, "Oh." All right, let's take another call.
Just using the auto pistol, you should try some of the other guns. I think you would find.
Oh no, I have.
I think you'd find your kill rate would improve. I'm playing with the auto pistol, but I'm trying to get accustomed to it because I think it's an interesting tool, but it's definitely not as efficient as an SMG or the assault rifle.
No, I definitely transitioned into other weapons as I leveled up, but it was a great starter weapon. I think that's what's so wonderfully welcoming about this game is that you don't feel inept, which I so often do when jumping into multiplayer online.
Well, it's like Mr. Kelsey put in the chat. This is a game for you in the leading role of an action flick and makes you feel super empowered. You have a great time playing this game. I have not yet had a bad time playing this game. That's the biggest endorsement. I have not yet played a match, no matter what my scoreboard was at the end, that I did not go, wow, that was awesome.
Did you try the Last Titan Standing mode yet, which I like to call Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
No, I haven't. It kind of looks like that.
It's so fun. It's so fun. Basically, everybody starts in a Titan, so you don't have to call in your Titan. You start in a Titan, and then it's you're in two teams, but it's the last team to have a Titan alive. So it's basically, you know, this huge
respawn, right?
There's no respawn, exactly. But you stay alive if your Titan explodes. You can still be a pilot and still try to attack the Titans. But it's so wonderful. You just become this posse of Titans running through the map, and then everybody starts blasting each other. These maps are relatively small, and you start blasting each other, and then everybody's rocking, socking robots, you know, melee. And some of that stuff is so satisfying when you run up to a guy and you rip open his center cage and yank the pilot out. And there's a lot of that wonderful, visceral feedback that this game gives. Let's take another call. We got someone on the line from 602. Are you an Xbox One owner? Do you have a Titanfall? Did you try it out?
Yes, I am. I actually just played the beta last night, and it was amazing.
So are you going to buy it? Were you planning to buy it before the beta? And so were you planning to buy it before the beta?
Oh, yeah, I was absolutely planning to.
Yeah. So it confirmed what you already knew.
Yeah, I was going to buy it before the beta.
Cool. Any other comments about the game?
I'm looking forward to see the end result, see more maps, see what else they can really do with it. And like you said about the Horde mode, that just sounds great too. If they want to throw that in eventually, that'd be great.
Yeah, I really hope that's part of the final game. I think that having a cooperative mode that isn't necessarily competitive with my friends, I would find to be really, really exciting and really fun. But that's me, because that's the kind of things I like, hanging out with my buddies online. And yeah, we can be part of the same team fighting another team, but it's more fun, I think, or at least
here's a question
a different kind
I got
of fun.
For the caller. It comes out of the chat room from Winnebago Man. Mm-hmm. Points out that Call of Duty had a lot of creative modes, but they all wound up being empty. So my question is, you know, how long do you think Titanfall holds your attention if it really becomes like Call of Duty did, mostly just a everybody squad up team DM sort of game?
Caller, what do you think?
Maybe he left.
Oh, hey, Jeff, it's Malt again. I don't know if you all go to back to me again, but I mean, I think the big question for the game is going to be one, like, I mean, I guess the how the burn card situation works out, like, you know, if they are going to be microtransactions for, like, different Titans, different unlocks. It's like, you know, EA doesn't exactly have the best history dealing with microtransactions, especially after what happened with Dungeon Keeper on mobile. And I think there is something to be said about how a single player kind of engenders a certain sense of ownership, or, you know, like, you get familiar with the characters, like, say, Master Chief in Halo, or even in, you know, in Call of Duty, you have those guys like, I forget their names, like Soap and McTavish or whatever those guys were. Right. It still gives people some sense of, hey, like, you know, I know these characters, I want to go back to it. And I think if the game doesn't have a strong single player, you might be easily swayed by other games that are going to come out. I mean, obviously, Infamous is going to be coming out soon, so is Dark Souls 2. And both of those are going to be, you know, the opposite end of the second red. Those are really single-player focused games, maybe debatable as Dark Souls 2. But I wonder if those are going to be able to pull away people from Titanfall by saying, hey, this is strong narrative, and Titanfall is always going to be there. Why not play this instead of Titanfall?
Well, I think that'll happen. You know, that's always going to happen with the new shiny thing that comes out. It's interesting how much everybody keeps talking about this fear of microtransactions. I mean, clearly the burn cards are a major part of the game, and they certainly
EA
are.
And EA and Microsoft, I mean, I think it's fair, right? Look at their track record. Mostly it's been EA on mobile, but they've been jerks. And Microsoft, every launch game, Microsoft published launch game, was riddled with them. And I think I'm happy to see fan caution with this, right? I don't think it's get out the torches and pitchforks yet, but, you know, good on people for being cautious and not just diving in like, this is gonna be the best thing ever, here we go, here's all my money. Like, let's take our time with things. You don't need to be day one. If you have, let's wait for questions to be answered. And so far, you know, like, as you mentioned, Respawn has been good about saying there aren't going to be any, and I really hope that's true. But I mean, EA, as silly as the worst company in America contest is each year, you know, EA gets its place on there for a reason, and they haven't done a lot right by gamers, you know?
Yeah, I happen to think, I mean, in the absence of any microtransaction functionality, I think the burn cards are pretty brilliant. Not only did they even the playing field, but I love the idea of this one-time use buff. I think that is such a cool thing. And even the one-time use buff that gives you a different Titan for that until you die, how cool is that? I think that is a brilliant concept. And I wonder if other genres of games can start employing that kind of thing. I mean, clearly it's borrowed from League of Legends and Dota. I mean, these are these kinds of things where you go to the store and you buy, you know, a potion to use that round, and you spend some of your hard-earned cash in those games that you've earned to use it that round, and then it's gone.
I also had a one-time use buff, and I used it in college when I was running track, and now I just have a lifetime of slowly gaining weight.
I thought you were going to say it was how you got married.
All right, let's take another caller. We got 801 on the line. Are you playing Titanfall? What are your feelings? Oops, I did not click. Oops, yes, I did. Hang on.
This is Eric from Salt Lake City.
Hey, Eric.
I am not playing Titanfall. I have very little interest in it just because I'm really not into a multiplayer-only shooter, which kind of brings me to my question for you guys. I wonder how many people like me are out there. You guys were talking about the guy who gets Call of Duty just for the single player. And, you know, that's me to the degree I actually play Call of Duty. But, you know, I'll grab a Call of Duty, I'll grab Halo, I'll play the single player, I'll jump on multiplayer for a couple of rounds, get destroyed, and I'm kind of done with it. And it makes me wonder what you guys think Titanfall is going to sell like. I know it's the new hotness right now, and everyone's excited for this free beta. But, you know, in a little while, it's going to be a $60 product right next to other larger single-player games. You know, for you guys, assuming you're not getting a free review copy or whatever, are you willing to take a $60 plunge on that for a multiplayer-only experience? You know, I'm especially interested in Garnet's take, where he is, I understand unemployed right now. Money might start be getting a little tight. You know, if he was sitting there looking at Titanfall versus Lightning Returns, which I think he already has anyway, but if you're sitting there weighing those two and you've got the choice of one game this month, what do you end up going with?
Well, Eric, to answer your first question, how many gamers out there are like you? None. You're the only one. Don't move. You're in Salt Lake City. We're sending a recon team to pick you up, and we're going to make you like online first-person shooters. So stay where you are. Stay on the line. Garnet, dispatch the helicopter, and you can answer the second part of his question.
Yeah, it's a really great question, right? Because, and I think it's a genuine question that we all have when we look at our budget for entertainment across everything. To me, the question's really going to be down to Infamous and Titanfall, right? And there's definitely a bit of a wild card in what I do, which is that, you know, especially now that I'm going to be, you know, between jobs for a while, don't know how long it's going to last, but one of the things I'm going to be doing is, you know, some YouTube stuff, some podcasting stuff. I feel like, you know, I need to get back to really playing a lot of stuff and talking about it. So I'll be spending a little more freely. But if it came down to it, that's a really good point. I think that the beta for Titanfall, because it is multiplayer, would probably give them a small edge to my mind over Infamous, though I would definitely, I mean, you know, actually, maybe I'll go the other direction. Maybe I would get Infamous and play Infamous to my heart's content and finish it and then say, okay, I played it. I've had that experience. Titanfall is probably matured now. The you know, server stability is going to be there. The players are going to be there. And I'll go in and play that. You're right. It would be a really challenging question to answer. I don't disagree.
It's interesting to think that there may be a portion of the people who downloaded the beta this weekend and went, oh, I see. Is this all it is? Oh, okay. Well, I had that experience. I played that game for a weekend, you know, so I'm good. there may be that, you know, there may be people who are like, oh, I was excited to try it. Now I've tried it. Now I don't have to buy it.
Well, I think that's why the beta ends here fairly soon, is that it's not going to go on. I don't think there are going to be many, because it's a pretty high dopamine drip game. I mean, You know, it's a game that you. I would say that I'm definitely ready when this show ends to hop back in and play some more.
Well, you know, there are some other stories that were submitted by users that I want to hit on. One of which is this crazy Twitch Pokemon play thing.
Dude, it's the weirdest thing.
What's that?
It is the weirdest thing ever.
It is. This was submitted by at Cubeside and at Adam Rita, and it is basically a Twitch channel where thousands of people are cooperatively controlling Pokemon Red Blue through the chat function.
There's nothing cooperative about it.
Well, I think in order to have anything happen, yeah, it's kind of a chaos, but they managed to defeat the first trainer, Misty. So
I know. I have no idea how they managed to do that.
That's pretty
wild. Moving on. It's kind of insane.
So my question to you guys is...
Yep, Kelso has it right. Praise the Helix. Helix is the one who's been sort of like, at least when he's there, it holds together and things happen.
Well, so over 175,000 people have watched and or played this Twitch channel. My question to you guys is this a thing? Is this a one-time kind of oddity? Or is there a potential for a new kind of massively multiplayer where it's not that... multiple people are playing in their own games interactively, is that massive amounts of people are playing at the same time one game. Is it possible? Is it a thing?
It's a fun social experiment. It's a very fun social experiment. But if you've gone into the Twitch channel and just watched how very fast the scroll goes by with just all the inputs, up, down, down, up, 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 down, left, left, up, down, start. It's going by incredibly fast. And the fact that there is even able, like you watch the player character move on screen and he'll go up and he'll get a dead end and get stuck. But the fact that they're even actually able to get anywhere or when they get out into grass, it's just ridiculous.
But people are watching it. People are enthralled by it. I don't understand.
Because it is a crazy social experiment. It is pretty insane.
Yeah. Another interesting bit of news that could have been a story of the week in a different week is something I wanted to bring up specifically because you're here, Garnet, because I know you're such a huge fan of Borderlands 2.
Yes.
Randy Pitchford had an interview this week that said, we're definitely not working on Borderlands 3. No, I'm not just saying that. I'm not jerking you around like Valve does with Half-Life 3. We really haven't even started on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You don't believe him?
I think that developer with other titles in the works that are further along and doesn't want you to be distracted does exactly what they need to do. And I think also working on is a term that depends on how you take. There's no doubt in my mind that there's been some pre-prototype discussions about, you know, hey, what would a new Battlefield 3 look like? And if you look at his quote, he even talks about how they've been, you know, haven't, I think he says they haven't started thinking about that, which means that they obviously have started thinking about that, right? Oh yeah, we can imagine what it must achieve. Well, then you've thought about it. We don't know what that is yet. Well, obviously you don't know because you just started thinking about it. So yeah, he's not, I think what he's saying is that he's not going to fuck with you in that he's not going to say, oh yeah, we're working on it, where you get your hopes up and then it becomes like a Half-Life 3, Duke Nukem and all that kind of mess. But of course they have to be thinking of it.
Do you think there's anything scary to this that it's BioShock 2? I mean,
nah,
Borderlands 2 is Take-Two's best-selling game ever. How long are they going to let that franchise sit on the sidelines?
Well, he talks about how there's other game. Borderlands games happening. It's just not Borderlands 3. There's obviously the Telltale game. There's, something else. Oh, the Vita game that's happening.
Also known as Borderlands 2 again. I mean, yeah, there's other stuff with the IP's not dead, but right. Tales of Borderlands isn't going to sell what Borderlands 2 sold. I feel like, what is Take-Two's moneymaker this year or next year? You know, they give GTA and Rockstar their time. I wonder how much freedom Gearbox has in this without parent company Take-Two being like, what are you doing?
This is something we should applaud. I mean, they see, he said they've got a Brothers in Arms game coming, and they've got two new IPs for next gen, or what is now current gen. I think that's really something we should applaud. Like, yeah, we want guys to invest in new IPs, and I hope those are exciting and fun. Also, I thought it was really interesting and telling that one of the things he cited as to a reason why they weren't working on Borderlands 3 at this point is because if it was coming out now or anywhere close to now, it would have to be a transgenerational game, and they didn't want to do that. They want to make Borderlands 3, when it happens, truly something that is in the new generation, and that because of sales concerns, they wouldn't really need to have the install base of all the generation or both generations. And I kind of am happy that that's not the way it is. Like, I want them to, when we see Borderlands 3, I want it to be, fully engaged on the new hardware. I think that'd be great.
Makes a ton of sense. And keep in mind, they have a new IP they're working on. I mean, Brothers in Arms, the thing that worries me a little bit about Gearbox, and, you know, I know a number of people that work there, and I think that they're really, cool people and have a lot of creative ideas, is that, all being said, they are a little inconsistent on the actual product that hits the market, right? Aliens Colonial Marines, sort of a train wreck, and Brothers in Arms was so unique and interesting when it first hit the market because it had that cool system where you controlled your squads and you used your squads to lay down covering fire. Right. And they sort of wilted under the pressure of Call of Duty to make it more traditional. And in so doing, Brothers in Arms sort of became, marginalized. It just wasn't as cool anymore.
How excited are you that they're making the Homeworld games up-resed and fully remastered? You're a fan of Homeworld, right, Garnett?
I am a huge fan of Homeworld.
Me too.
How excited I am, moderately. I'm much more excited for, as a fan of real-time strategy games, I'm much more excited for someone to come along and really grab the torch and put some life back into real-time strategy. I mean, I think it's been since the era of really of like Rise of Nations, where we had real, innovative, trying to make pushes forward in what real-time strategy games can be. And right now, the MOBA scene is really soaking up all the best designers and talents in that space.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I'm going to turn to a caller and see what they think the story of the week is so they can really settle that debate. We got somebody on the line from 479. What is your opinion, based on the stories we brought up, what's your story of the week pick?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Christian. Thanks for having me on. And just real quick, Garnett, I've been listening to you basically once a week for like the past 8 years or so. And I just want to say that, man, your enthusiasm and what I believe is your respect for your audience has come through in your work. You've given me hours of enjoyment, and I really appreciate it. I know you're going to continue to be a voice in the games media, and I really look forward to your next project.
Garnett's dad on the line, everybody. That's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No,
so what do you think about...
I've been following...
Go ahead, Kyle. Are you there?
Oh, yeah. And the second thing I just wanted to say is, man, how amazing was yesterday? We had the Titanfall beta. I got to marathon House of Cards, and we had a new True Detective. So Sunday, the 16th, was an amazing day. I think
you can confirm that, right, Garnett? You can confirm that.
I will confirm that. I need to get on this True Detective thing. I need to get on the True
Are
Detective.
Are you not watching that? Oh, my God, it's so good.
I know. I need to get up on it. I know.
All right. We'll take another call. I think he tacitly confirmed that Titanfall is the story of the week, but he was too busy gushing about you, Garnett.
Can I throw out one other potential story?
Sure.
My awesomeness?
How awesome Garnett is. How awesome is he? Is Donkey Kong Frozen, whatever it's called?
Donkey Kong Country. Yeah. Frozen Tropical Freeze.
Tropical Freeze, there it is. Is this the best game that no one will play? This, you know what I mean?
Like, I don't think no one's going to play it. I've been playing it. It's awesome. It is fantastic.
So we're giving it 2 seconds of talk, and the rest of this episode has been about a beta for a game that doesn't come out for a month.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Here's the thing.
I'm Wii U-less.
What's that?
I mean, it's easy. I don't have the Wii U.
I know, and neither do I. How many great games does it take? I don't want to get into when do you buy a Wii U, but it's just unfortunate that it seems like it's a fantastic game, and what does it take? Is that game too kiddie? Is it just not? I mean, it's not. There's no discussion about it at all, right? Reviews are out. It's amazing, and no one's going to play it. And
it
that's
does
kind of
lack.
Sad.
It does lack a lot of giant robots in it, for my taste. Sure. But no, it is a great game. It's beautiful. You really, should not underestimate how gorgeous a game Donkey Kong Country is in person. It is truly, truly beautiful. The art direction is fantastic. It really looks like a cartoon come to life. It's got a lot of life and vibrance. And it's got that classic Donkey Kong Country fun, great platformer stuff. It's still also very hard and frustrating and unforgiving. So I think that's off-putting to some people. And I think platformers in general are, you know, not the thing that gets people all amped up the way they used to be.
Hey, no one was reluctant to stick a knife in Mac.
That's true.
And you and I both really enjoyed that game. I guess, Christian, The question I'd throw back to you is, how much of this do you think starts to reflect where the entertainment culture exists today versus where it did a decade or two ago? You know, how much competitive punch can a cartoon driven platformer develop when here comes Titanfall with OMG mechs and, you know, crazy next gen graphics, and here comes, you know, Infamous with, you know, edgy dark overtones and superpowers?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And, you know, I think it's, I love a good platformer. You know, on Weekend Confirmed, you know, Andrew Yoon and I and other people gushed about the Rayman games. I know Ozzy loved Rayman games as well. And there are really great platform experiences to be had. And I don't know, is this, you know, the evolution, or just the genre not dead, but it's just going to become increasingly more and more niche and you know, a cycle that's happening? It's sad because these are still great games, but I don't know what the PR answer is, how you get a game like Donkey Kong to reach the, you know, the popular discussion that something like Titanfall is getting into. And unfortunately, I think Retro might be one of the best developers around with the least amount of buzz behind any of their games, except for maybe the first Metroid Prime when that came out, because for whatever reason, their games have come out around the time that other really big games have come out on other systems. And while they get respect and love and critical acclaim, they never do big numbers. And it's sad. I don't know.
You can't say that about Metroid.
Metroid Prime 1 did really well. Metroid Prime 3 did. 3 didn't do that well. 2 didn't do that well. It didn't even get reviewed that well in its time. People, you know, I really liked it.
Well, because you had to do a lot of rerunning. But here's the thing, I guess I would also say, is that
those games both had giant robots. I would like to point that out. Giant robots.
Pendulums swing back and forth, you know, and I think that as is the case right now, if you had gone, 10 years ago and said, Disney's going to have a huge resurgent, they're going to make this movie called Frozen, and it's going to be a runaway hit, you might have looked at all the stuff Disney was doing and go, you sure about that? Are you really sure about that? And now I think you're looking at the same situation, and I could certainly see that there's going to, you know, there's a saturation point, and, you know, a lot of people already talked about it with, like, Call of Duty games, but with, you know, big robots and high tech and super science fiction, and, you know, maybe we swing back through and maybe we'll get back to some good fantasy. I'd love to see some more high fantasy stuff. And the same thing with, you know, character-driven cartoon-like platformers. But, you know, Nintendo needs to inject some energy in and of itself. You know, I think they tried to do that some with some of the new Mario Tanuki suits, and that's like a very thin veneer, though, right? They need to really get down to getting back to let's design some stuff that people are excited about and not just live on our laurels.
Well, there's a unfortunately there's a month long moratorium on DLC of talking about how to fix Nintendo. So we unfortunately have to move on.
Hold on a second now before you do that, because the game. While we're in Nintendo for a second, I want everybody who has a 3DS to go out today and download the free Steel Diver Subwars.
Ooh,
free game, free to play. And you know, if you watch Nintendo Direct, this was Iwata's. I love how he put it. Think of it as a contemplative shooter. If you haven't caught up with this is a multiplayer 4v4 sub war. You spend most of the time in a first person view where you are driving your submarine, which is completely different from running around in, I mean, if you juxtapose this with Titanfall, you're going to drive yourself crazy, because it's so slow relatively. You're like, You know, it's just such a difference. But you're piloting these subs. They've upped the speed enough to where there's still momentum, but they're pretty nimble. You're firing both, you know, homing torpedoes and dumb torpedoes. So there's, you know, a very definite amount of tactics and leading and tracking. There's some ways that you can hide in your sub. It is, I think, the 3DS sleeper title of the summer. It's free to play. If you drop $10 on it, you get like some extra single player stuff, and you get some additional subs. But you can easily play with the two subs. The two subs that come with it for free that you can play all in multiplayer, no problem. Totally free, totally completely balanced. And Chris Wellman, I did that just to throw you off.
I'm also really excited about Squids, which was talked about in the Nintendo Direct. I think that's that game looks awesome.
It has Morse code chat. How crazy is that?
Okay, we're going to the phones. We got some people on the line waiting to talk. Somebody from 602, what do you think the story of the week was? And also, I think you should say the one I said. Are you there, caller 602?
Oh, hey.
Hey, man.
I didn't actually think I was going to get on the air.
Well, you have. Don't squander this opportunity. Knock us dead with your awesome question.
Awesome question. I honestly had no idea I was going to get on the air.
Bring it, Arizona. Bring it hard.
And that's all it takes.
With the Titanfall, my biggest thing on, like, you know, the single player, there is no single player, everything is multiplayer, campaign and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'd imagine it'd be really annoying, like, if you want to just explore the map or something, you can't, since there's no single player, people are going to be killing you, and it'd be really annoying.
This is true. That tends to be the case, but I will say that the maps themselves are pretty awesome, and I learned at least the very few maps that are in the beta, I learned pretty quick. And again, you can move through them so fast. It's really, really quite exciting because the verticality of being a pilot, when you're leaping onto the top of things and double jumping and wall running, it's you get through those maps very fast. And I think that helps you learn them a little faster.
Think that's true of any multiplayer. You know, yeah, while there's not a single player game element to this game, we talked about that. But I mean, that's true of the Halo multiplayer levels, or you learn them by playing them, and you learn where you get killed a lot by, oh, that's a choke point, right? And then you dive in and you figure out your points where you like to play. I think people will find that in Titanfall quickly. And as more maps come out, you'll see people where, you know, they like to set up their Titans, where they like to snipe from. I think you'll see all those same things develop in the game.
One thing the AI does do a good job of in the multiplayer is forcing the combat hotspots to move around the map.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of defeats a little bit of what you're talking about, Christian, in that, yeah, there are some spots where you might want to settle in, but the way the AI pushes around the map does do a good job of sort of upsetting that I'm just going to set up camp here sort of mentality.
Okay, we got somebody on the line from 631. I know you can do better than the last guy. Hit us with a cool question.
Topic of the week is obviously Titanfall, biggest news. Extremely fun. Most fun I've had since the original Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. My question has got to be, why isn't this a $40 downloadable title? I mean, it is online only. The $60 price point is, you know, a little much for something that's only online. Why not just make it a $40 download only for people who obviously have the Xbox One?
Because we've talked about it this entire show, and so has the entire internet, right?
I think that's true. The truth is because people will pay $60 for it. And I think that's what's really going to happen. I mean, I started out the show with that as my sort of thesis statement, is I think that what we're seeing now is, instead of one $60 product that has both things in it, what we're going to start seeing is two $60 games. One of them is a multiplayer game, and one of them is the single player game in the same universe. I think it makes a lot of sense as far as resources wise for developers. And I think that unfortunately people are going to be willing to pay that.
I didn't realize I needed a thesis for this show. I mean,
no, it's required. You didn't see the show notes. It said,
well, look, you guys are cynics. I think the reality of why it's a $60 game also comes down to this is a full fledged game. Don't think of it as just a, you know, would you pay $60 for a full fledged single player game? Yeah, people do all the time. So $60 for a full-fledged multiplayer game is right there. And it doesn't change the amount of, you know, like the real heavy lifting, especially in these next-gen games, comes down to art and all the texture work and the size of the maps in this game, the amount of animation modeling that's going into the game. It's equally on par with any single-player game.
Go ahead.
To dive into your thesis, Jeff, I mean, one, this is John Davison, you know, talked about this on a double jump we did at NerdMelt, one of the Nerdist episodes, making his prediction for what the future of gaming is. And I think you're right. I think we'll see more and more of this. But it's interesting. It's almost a reaction to people giving us too much before. You know, because before I paid $80 for Super Street Fighter II Turbo on the Super Nintendo, or whichever one the Super Nintendo got. It was like $80 or $85. And then we started getting so much value in our games. Where it was like, okay, you have a single player, multiplayer, a horde mode, season one of Halo Ops or whatever is in Halo 4. And you get all this and it's $60. And that became what we expected. And now the industry, you know, like Garnet said, the art assets in these games are getting more and more expensive to make. I think they're trying to break off those pieces, and now we're reacting to, wait, we had all this stuff for free before, or, you know, as one price before, and now you're ripping us off. And it's almost like the App Store on iOS is trying to deal with, you know, you get this race to the bottom, and then someone comes along like a Walking Dead or Republic with what Camouflage is trying to do, and, you know, raising that price point, and people are like, I don't know, or like YouTube. Wait a minute, I have to watch a 5 seconds of a 30-second ad before I can watch my YouTube video? I didn't have to do this 3 years ago, YouTube. You're ripping me off. And we get entrenched in this value proposition of what we used to have instead of saying, is this worth it to me now, what they're doing? And, you know, I think I agree with what Garnet is saying. I mean, you look at the work that went into Titanfall, and yeah, it's easy to say, and I do agree, they're charging $60 for it because that's what people will pay. It's not as if, you know, they just put some duct tape on old Call of Duty assets and we're like, and here's the game. Let's go rip people off, right? Like, we're just so used to getting so much in games.
The fact that
now
people will pay $60 for it is why they are able to put a huge full-scale team against it and do something on this scope.
I want to ask you guys about this new Harmonix game that just got announced, Chroma, which is a shooter, but since
first
it's
person.
Harmonix. Yes.
Yeah,
but it is, since it's a Harmonix game, it's also a music game. So you're making music, and you're shooting dudes. I'd love to hear what you guys think. I'm of two minds about it because first, I love music games, and I'm excited that they're still making new music games and innovating and coming up with interesting new ways to apply music to games. But the other part of me is sad that it's like, oh, all right, well, we need to have people shoot people or else no one will buy our game. So we can still do a music game. We just have to make sure that people shoot people in it.
Did you guys watch the trailer?
Yeah.
I have not seen the trailer.
The trailer I watched, and it's...
I should pull it. I'll pull it up right here so I can watch it while you're talking about it. Chroma?
Chroma, yeah. It's a very stylistically sexualized woman in like a future space outfit with cleavage. Running through a Tron-like world and zapping people. And I have hope that the game will be good, but I am a little sad that I feel like, maybe this is what you were saying, Jeff, that Harmonix, I feel like, have done, like Fantasia, when I saw it at E3, looked so fun. And I feel like their games have always been different, right? Or like the Rock Band was such a pure, fun, great experience of getting your friends together. And this looks like a... oh crap, what sells? Here's a sexy girl shooting people, but hey, there's music. And I liked everything Harmonix has done, but I'm nervous. It's free to play for PC. That's my feeling. You know, what did you feel after you watched the trailer? Did that make you more or less excited, Jeff? Did that make you feel better about anything?
I mean, it's kind of what I expected to see. I like the idea of applying music in interesting ways in games, and these guys have a great track record, obviously, and I want to try it. I definitely want to try it. I just feel like, I don't know, the idea of using music as a weapon in a game and how they're talking about how you and your teammates will conspire to create, you know, a symphony of music that complements one another. So it's almost like a jazz improvisation. And the Polygon article that I read, the person who got hands-on with it, said that as he was playing the shooter, which he dubbed to be kind of unremarkable as a shooter, but as he was playing it, he was much more interested in creating fun music than he was in shooting anybody. And it is free to play, which is pretty crazy.
Music and shooting can be fun. I mean, Rez is awesome. It's a relatively quick game to go play, and I probably dive back into Rez, I don't know, every 3 or 4 months. I'll play through some of my favorite Rez levels, and that's shooting to music, and you have some great headphones or a great sound system, and that, you know, there is like a rhythm that you get into. And if this game can pull that off, and Harmonix certainly has a track record used with great music, that's exciting. But just the trailer looks so, yep.
Also interesting, it's made by Hidden Path. So that's who's, I mean, that's whose name's there in the development credits. So I'm assuming that's, I mean, Harmonix, you know, I think that they have branched out. So they're using subordinate, you know, they're putting stuff out with Delver Studios. So that's, you know, they've done like Defense Grid, The Awakening, Defense Grid 2. They did Counter-Strike Global Offensive. The interesting, you know, obviously they're very tied in up in the Seattle community.
Hey Garnet, don't you think that if Rock Band was just a few years later, a few years into the free to play revolution, that the idea that you always professed wanting would have happened, that it would have been a platform, and that the free to play hooks would have just been buy songs. We'll give you
of
the platform.
Of course I do, because I would have been right then.
You would have been right. And I think that honestly, that's kind of, I think it's proof that Harmonix is making a free-to-play game now, that if only that franchise had, you know, come to fruition a few years later, or free-to-play had come to fruition a few years earlier, what we would have gotten is this, you know, free-to-download platform that you have. You go buy the plastic instruments or use plastic instruments from other games or whatever, and then you just buy a la carte songs and you have this free platform to, you know, it's iTunes, as you always said you wanted, which maybe would have meant it survived longer. I don't know.
Possibly. It would have pushed the momentum needed to negotiate those deals with the recording companies that really were the holdups as far as the licensing, because, you know, the developers have to put a lot of work into doing all the charting, but then the recording companies still wanted to get all their money back out of it, so it made it a tough economic prospect to make songs available at reasonable prices in any sort of volume.
Yeah. All right, we have waited too long. It is tabletop time.
Tabletop time?
By the way, if anybody wants to make a tabletop time segment jingle, I would love that. You do not have to use my voice in it in any way.
Tabletop time. It's time for a tabletop time, and we'll table the night away. Don't use that, you guys. Don't use that.
I just like to put out here publicly that, you know, if you need like a you know, like a utility guy, or like, you know, a first off the bench guy, because apparently you have a weekly board game night.
Yeah, man, you're in. Well, now that you have time, before you didn't have time.
Tabletop time. Jeff's coming around, Garnet. He's coming around to being a better IRL friend. He accepted my PS4 friend request recently, so that was a big step.
One of my biggest complaints is that there's no accept all. Like, I have to literally...
One of my biggest complaints is I've never been invited over to tabletop time. So, you know, we'll work on both of them.
Christian, if you had shown even one iota of interest, you would have been invited.
You mean like doing the show with you every week?
you remain very quiet during tabletop time.
Tabletop time?
All right. So the cool thing was, I went to OrcCon this weekend. It was President's Day weekend, and OrcCon happens in Los Angeles, which is a fun tabletop convention. It's no Comic-Con. It's very small, but super fun. I went with Peter Serretta from Slash Film and some other dudes. And I played a game that I've been wanting to play. A lot of people were calling it the best game of 2012. And that was Tolkien, the Mayan calendar, which is a crazy game. Okay, so there is a genre of board games that I've referred to before on this show and will refer to a lot in the future because it's one of my favorite genres, and that is worker placement. The way the worker placement games work is that you have little tokens that represent your workers, and in order to do any actions in the game, you place them onto the board in certain spots. A worker placed in that spot usually means that someone else can't put their worker in that spot. So it's a really fun mechanic where I get to do something and you don't. And there's a whole bunch of different kinds of worker placement games. But the thing that Tolkien the Mayan calendar adds to the mix, which is mind-bendingly crazy, is that usually when you put a guy down, you're activating that action. Well, in Tolkien the Mayan calendar, you put a guy down on your turn, and on your next turn, if you take the guy away, that's how you activate the action, which all sounds well and good, except what you're placing the guys onto is a series of interlocking gears that rotate every round, every turn. They rotate. So you have five gears that are all interlocking, and the each gear spoke points to an action. You place your little worker on the gear in front of one of the actions, but you're not activating that action because that guy isn't going to be facing that action the next turn, because when the gear rotates, he shifts positions into the next slot. So you're actually having to think ahead of what you're actually placing your guy down onto. You have to anticipate where he'll be and make decisions about when you pull him off. And the longer he stays on the gear, usually the better the action is that you get to do when you pull him off. But because he's been hanging out, waiting turn after turn, rotating around, you haven't been able to use him for other stuff. So there's this push and pull between letting your guy sit there and get to the really good stuff or taking him away and do actions quicker. Add to that 12,000 different ways to get points in the game, and it's all based on this Mayan calendar motif and offerings to gods, and the fact that the money in the game is corn, which is also used as food, and you need to feed your dudes. So you have to decide, well, am I going to eat my money or am I going to spend my money? I was completely overwhelmed when we played this game for the first time, and I got my butt kicked because I just could not grok what I was supposed to do. It was absolutely a brain burner for me. I'm excited to try it again, but for a first playthrough, it was pretty overwhelming. This is a major complex game, and I wish that the Mayan calendar theme wasn't what they went with. I feel like a much more, I don't know, contemporary or easy to understand theme would make more sense, because you have this. You have the rules, which you're trying to digest, and you're also trying to digest, well, what does it mean in the Mayan calendar? And you have all these weird symbols that correspond to certain things, and each action is represented by a bunch of symbols, which they do to make the game able to be published in multiple languages without having to translate it. But because the symbols are all these weird Mayan calendar icons, it's not as clear as it could be if it was another more interesting and, you know, a theme that I was excited about. You know, if it was like, oh, the gears are steampunk and we're like in the steampunk thing, I think I would grok the rules a little quicker. However, really fun, crazy game, and this mechanic, first of all, putting the board together where you have to like plug in all these gears and everything moves, it's a sight to behold. I urge people to check out my Instagram. I Instagrammed a photo of it. A game I'm really excited to try again. I just got completely obliterated the first playthrough. So that's tabletop time. Tabletop time for this week.
Question. So I understand the Mayan thing is more confusing, or, you know, you were saying, do you think it would have been more or less confusing if it was a world created for the game where you would still have all those problems, right? Like, what is a world that is simpler? Is it just like in real life stuff? And like, oh, you know, now I'm going to New York City, you know, like real life locations. Yeah. I mean, I think a high fantasy, you'd still have all those problems, but yet, you know, people have accepted magic, certainly has created a whole bunch of terms that are now industry standard, you know, across that game, and people are fine with them. you know, is the problem mind calendar, or is it almost harder to understand because it's a real thing that few people understand than if it was just like, here's our gobbledygook fiction, read this book, learn it, and then go play?
Well, there's a lot of games, you know, board games called abstract games, which are basically like chess or checkers or whatever, that have no theme. They're just abstract. It's just a rule set. And basically, Tolkien the Mayan Calendar is an abstract game that they slapped this Mayan motif onto. There's not really much that's thematically interesting. Like the game I talked about last week, Le Havre, which is my favorite board game. It makes sense. Like you're going to the dock, you're getting certain goods that have to transform into other goods on the dock. You have to fish to get food. And when you build a building, it takes wood and stone and brick and things that buildings take to build. So you have that layer of, oh, I get this because it makes sense in the real world. When you're talking about this basically abstract game that they go, well, you have to sacrifice certain things to the gods, and there's certain gods that will help you by giving you benefits, and you go up on this track with one god and you go up on another track with another god. It's like, well, none of that has any relevance to me. It's not helping me to understand. It's providing another layer for me to understand. Some games that use theme to help you understand.
Because I just wonder, like, my older brother, this is probably 7 years ago now, got really into the game Go, which, you know, the black and white little tiles, and he got it for me for Christmas, and holy crap, I do not understand that game. You know, I can play it, but badly. You know, it's a pretty complex game, and I wonder if there was something that I could attach the rules to in that game, while an abstract game like chess or checkers would be, once you get over the hurdle of learning, you know, like you were saying, oh, this god does this, if that's something, it's like almost serves as a mnemonic, you know, to help remember that rule set.
Yeah, exactly. But a very, very fascinating game. And my gosh, the brain required to come up with that mechanic is pretty exciting. All right, we're sort of running up to the end of our time here. I want to take one more call. We got somebody from 312 who just called. Your chance to ask a question. Use it wisely.
Hey, this is Danish from Chicago.
Hey, man.
I actually just got a question. I'm coming off of your discussion of that Mayan game. Where do you fall on the complexity of rules in games? Like, it sounds like that's a pretty dense, deep game, and you said you were kind of having trouble getting your head around it. So I'm just curious, you know, when is a game too complex? And a recent example, I recently played Battle of Endines, and I thought that was cool, but I just think that Yomi is such a better game because of its simplicity. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I completely agree with that, Battle of Endines versus Yomi. Yomi, of course, it was a game we covered on TRS a long time ago, and you should check out that video if you get a chance. I think it's a really fun video that we did. Basically, Yomi is war, but done right. It's a deck of cards that you have it's basically Street Fighter, the card game. You have these fighters, and you get to play a card out of your hand that does a certain attack, and then somebody else can...
Is that the game we played, Jeff? Did you bring that into the studio? I think we played it at Week and Confirmed a few times.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's true. A really fun, simple game. Yeah, a great one. But I think it's a great question about rules, because honestly, what exactly happened at OrcCon, which is a great thing about a convention that you can do, is that Peter bought the game. We unfolded it, put it together. We're sitting there reading through the rules going, oh my God. And we happened to notice somebody else playing the same game at another table at the convention. So I went over to them and said, hey, do you have a second? Could you just kind of give us a quick rundown on how to play this? And they walked over and they taught us how to play it, which was super nice of them and very generous, but also really cool that you could do that in the environment of a convention. And it's always the best way to learn how to play a game is have someone teach it to you, which is why a lot of these board game companies are resorting to YouTube videos and stuff when they publish their games to have someone explaining the rules in a clear, concise way rather than having to read them. Because reading it's – somebody – I just heard on another podcast, somebody mentioned that board games is the only – entertainment where you have to pass a reading comprehension exam and then a oral presentation exam before you can play it, because you have to read the rules and then present them to others. So it can be a little tricky. And yeah, these really complex games, you know, it does take a while to figure it out. And especially if you haven't played a lot of games before, that's why people refer to certain games as starter games or gateway games, you know, is the game that you can get you into the hobby because it's kind of easy to pick up. And then once you figure out how these games work, it tends to be easier to figure out how other games work. Cause even in the board game industry, games tend to be iterative. You know, we talked about Trains a couple of weeks ago, which is like, oh, it's Dominion plus this. Well, it's like, well, if you haven't played Dominion, you got to learn that part and then the plus this part as well. So, reading the rules, learning the rules, that is a major barrier to entry. And it's probably what's off-putting to a lot of people for the hobby. But I think the more you do it, the easier it becomes. All right, Garnet, do you have any other things you want to bring up before we wrap this baby?
Well, you didn't give me any warning there.
No, I never do. I never do. You don't have to. It's fine. Just thought if
well, you know, the big question that's been bouncing around the around the chat room has been this whole what happens with the Xbox division at Microsoft, and do we put any validity into Amazon potentially being a bidder for that?
Well, there was that tweet from someone at Microsoft saying this is all a bunch of hogwash, which of course is what they would obviously say either way.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah. What's your take?
Well, we were talking about it in the chat room, and I think that, you know, the big thing for me here is that there is a tremendous amount of pressure around Microsoft right now to get reorganized. Look, you just had a CEO search that sort of underlined just how difficult a situation Microsoft finds itself in. Who would have thought that a company the size and scope of Microsoft would find it difficult to name a CEO? But yeah. Now that they have, there's going to be this necessary sort of changing of the guard, which they've needed that to come along for a while. And I think that much as Sony underwent, you know, and continues to undergo a number of growing pains, Microsoft is at a point where it needs to shake some things up. And part of that is it's good business to question your structure and say, hey, should we have all these things in here? Are they benefiting us? How do they fit into our business model? And when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, I think that they will definitely conclude that having a arm directly in the entertainment business and having, you know, made it, so to say, it wasn't, you know, look, 10 years ago when, you know, Xbox was a startup, no one expected them to be able to break in. Now they've broken in. Now they are a major player. To walk away from that when it's such an important part of the continuing growth of the entertainment landscape for the next century, yeah, like that makes no sense to walk away from that, right? Yeah. It just makes sense to figure out how do we do it right? How do we do it correctly? And keep in mind, you know, that they have to be questioning some of the things that they're doing. Like, does it make sense for them to start getting into content production? You know, that we have, they have shows gearing up for Xbox One. Maybe some of those projects do come under a closer microscope. But at the end of the day, I think that these businesses that people are now saying, oh, well, the investors are pushing them to spin out. If they were to spin those out, then Microsoft, its very self, would lose an important part of its new image, of its new persona, that's very important to being a viable business going forward.
Yeah, and people, for some reason, there seems to be this weird accepted feeling that Microsoft is in trouble or not doing well or needs to sell off something. This is an extremely profitable company, and they've done very well over the last year. Their stock is up. They're doing all right. I don't think there's any kind of need for them to sell off the Xbox division. So I think that's a little bit strange to think that might happen. And I certainly don't think – I don't necessarily think it should. I think that – I think
– But it is smart investment pressure. It is smart for investors to say, hey, this is a period of turnover. And clearly, you know, they've missed and been behind on some opportunities. And, you know, they need to figure out why that happened and how that got to be the case. You've now got a product in – let's bust down one of their biggest deficiencies right now, mobile space. So they arguably have a terrific – small set of hardware that they've worked very closely with partners to get. And they obviously have also won a number of good compliments on the operating system. And they're kind of in an interesting spot. You know, you have Apple at one end of the perspective who have a set OS and a set handset. And if you want the handset and the OS, then you get the iPhone 5S and that's that. Or, you know, you get one of the ones that's been moved on. And then the other end of the spectrum is you have Google and you've got a billion and one different versions of the operating system. And it's a real pain in the neck to develop for. And you've got a bunch of different hardware that ranges from entry phones to, oh my God, amazing tech, like cutting edge stuff. And then in between that, you have this opportunity for Microsoft to be, okay, here are a handful of phones that we've worked very closely with the manufacturers on with a unified OS, so not letting the OS fragment the way it has in Android, but at the same time offering a little more options, some high-end stuff, maybe a little more chance for new phones to come out on different cycles. And that's a good environment. So now they've got to figure out, okay, how do we get anyone to buy the damn thing? And how do we get people engaged in it? And how do we build a good marketplace for it?
Question, all good questions. I unfortunately we'll have to leave it there, but I appreciate you being on, Garnet. It's been hard not seeing you every week and even just these last couple of weeks. And it's been awesome having you on this show. And we got to figure out, we got to get our ducks in a row and figure out what we're doing next.
Line up the ducks.
And in the meantime, we would definitely love to have you back anytime that you're available. But in the meantime,
that's tough.
Where can people keep up with what's going on with you?
Well, the easiest way to keep up with me would be on the Twitters. So just my name, Garnet Lee, GARNETTLEE. That's who to follow. I think I also have a YouTube channel, which I'm going to probably crank something up. Next podcast will be something soon that Jeff and I are talking about. I'm probably going to do some Twitch streams. I'm probably going to do some, you know, quick hitter stuff on YouTube. I'll probably just throw a bunch of stuff out there and see what those of you out there who are listening and watching like, and do more of the stuff you do and not the ones you don't.
Very cool. How about you, Christian? What's going on with you this week?
This week, I just got back from North Carolina. I'm in San Francisco this weekend and then Houston the next weekend. But if you're in LA, Tuesday, I'm doing a fun show called Warp Zone. It's Tuesday here in LA. And, you know what? Let's just be friends and play video games and, you know, be IRL friends, Jeff. That's all that's going on with me. I'm working on our IRL friendship and I'm going to come over and we're going to hang out.
Dude. I want that. I would love to play some Titanfall with both of you guys, by the way. But we only have two more days to play until we have to wait a while. So let's get on that.
Oh, yeah, I'm busy. I'm looking at my... Oh, yeah, that's not going to work. But
you're not doing well with this IRL like friend thing. of course, you can follow me on the Twitters at Jeff Cannata. That's with two N's and one T. This week at One Size Fits Hall said that DLC stands for his driving listen of choice when he's commuting, which is very cool and very nice of him. Next week, we are going to have Justin McElroy on the show. I'm a big fan of his from Polygon and from My Brother and Me podcast. So look forward
to
that.
Podcast.
Great podcast. Yeah, really fun. And hopefully Garnet and I will be talking about a new show that we'll be doing, if I can speak English.
We're doing.
That's it for now
be
for
like
DLC.
For games.
Until that, give this show a good review on iTunes. Tell your friends about the show. People ask, how can I help out the show? I love it. Honestly, the best thing you can do is tell your friends about the show. Have them subscribe via RSS or on iTunes. And if you listen live, thank you so much. That's so awesome. We love this community. But still, if you are an iTunes member, it seems silly, but that stuff really helps.
It really
does. So go give us a review, and if you type in a few nice words too, that helps even more. Because we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys and our sponsors. So thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Yes, we should thank New Relic one more time as well, and remind you guys that if you want to submit games for our March Madness, do that at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. I think that's going to be a really fun debate on which games win in each bracket. And you guys can play along, and we'll see if we can put together a prize for the bracket that win that's closest to what the actual winners are. And that'll do it for this week. We'll be back every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time at 5x5.tv/DLC. Until next week, Garnet, are you going to say something? People want you to say your catchphrase.
I'm sorry, what is that?
They want you to, it's the end of the show. I'm going to say the end of the show catchphrase. Thing, but they want you to say your end of the show catchphrase. I got so many tweets. Let Garnet say his thing. So I got to.
All right, everybody. That's been DLC, and we are Ghost.
Till next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place. We'll be right back.